dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the War of Ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney. I am thrilled to be able to take you about a bit of the battle space of the war for the free world. We're going to jump right into it with a man I admire greatly, Dr. Paul Kengor. As an historian, as in particular a scholar of several of my personal heroes, and we'll be talking about them in a moment, but also an educator, both in his capacity as a professor at Grove City College and through his many books, including The Crusader, Ronald Reagan and the Fall of Communism, Dupes, and a personal favorite, The Judge, about Bill Clark. Paul, welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio. As always, it's great to have you, but most especially because we've, of course, just celebrated the 101st birthday of Ronald Reagan yesterday, and certainly he's very much present with us at the moment in the course of the campaign. I'd like to talk about that with you in a moment, but first, just a quick appreciation of 100 years plus now perspective as a historian of Ronald Reagan's consequential presidency. And for that matter, you know, his role before becoming president in shaping the course of this country's 20th century, at the very least, if not 21st.
Yeah, well, you know, Frank, he really understood the 20th century and what was at stake. I mean, he was born in 1911. He died in 2004. So 93 years. He was our oldest president when he died. No other president had lived that long. John Adams, I think, had lived to 90, Herbert Hoover to 90. And so really sort of the bookends of Reagan's life was the rise and fall of Bolshevism in Soviet Russia, you know, which starts up in 1917 and collapses 1989 to 1991. And Reagan, I mean, Reagan as a little boy, you know, really didn't remember World War One much. He certainly remembered World War Two. That was absolutely fundamental. In fact, that's what got him interested in politics and as a liberal Democrat even. And then after World War II, the key with Reagan, Frank, is unlike a lot of other Hollywood progressives, Reagan learned that the totalitarianism of the Nazis had simply switched colors and places, yeah. Right? From you know, brown fascism in Germany to red communism in the Soviet Union. And so with that, Reagan in the 1940s, and for a little while, I mean, he admitted that he had been duped by a number of so-called progressive groups that were actually communist front groups. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Frank, I think there might have been four or five.
And saw not least his trade union penetrated by them and his industry in Hollywood.
Oh, right. And it was true. People don't get this because they don't get it because our schools are so terrible. Mm-hmm. Our universities are so filled with liberal bias. I mean, you know,
Grove City being a notable exception, of course.
Yeah, exactly. Grove City isn't accepted. The Hollywood 10, the Hollywood blacklist, they're all portrayed as innocent victims of McCarthyism, when in fact it was a Democratic-run House Committee on Un-American Activities that was on all of these, chasing all these groups in the first place. I mean, the Hollywood 10, if not all 10 of them, at least 9 of them were actual card-carrying members of Communist Party USA.
Yeah.
John Howard Lawson, Dalton Trumbo, Alva Bessie, Albert Maltz. Reagan knew all these people mm-hmm. because they wrote his scripts and they used them.
Yeah.
They used them as a liberal Democrat.
Yeah.
And so Reagan realized what the real danger was there. He eventually became such a stalwart anti-communist that he had to leave the Democratic Party. Remember, he said, "I don't leave the Democratic Party, you left me." And then going through the 70s, he encountered detente among both moderate Republicans and also Democrats, which he believed was accommodation of the Soviet Union, which
mm-hmm.
it was.
Mm-hmm.
And then you had, after that, Vietnam, Watergate, and then comes Carter and the malaise of the 1970s.
Yeah.
And the misery index. And, and the hostage crisis in 1979. Just weeks
all of which, all of which, he fundamentally departed from what was then the sort of orthodoxy of the time, and set a different course. Paul Kenger, we're going to run out of time way before we run out of topics. There are two that you've touched on that I really want to visit with you quickly. One is President Reagan. Became, of course, quite famous for having defeated Soviet communism. But as you say, there was a moment when the order of the day was that we should appease the Soviets. With accommodation, it was called détente at the time, was what all the smart people knew should be done. Sure. I'd ask you just to sort of compare and contrast, if you will, how we find ourselves today. With a similar kind of notion, very much the conventional wisdom, the orthodoxy, if you will, of the Obama administration particularly, with respect to a totalitarian ideology some have called communism with a god, namely Sharia. And I just wonder if you don't see a similar kind of need for the course correction that Reagan effected vis-a-vis communism back in the day.
Yeah, well, I mean, we're witnessing, especially from Iran, a form of totalitarianism. I mean, you know, the Ayatollah's
among others.
Theocracy.
Yeah, among others. And Muslim Brotherhood, too.
Right, that's right. And it, I'll never forget, back in June 2009, when you had the uprising in the Iranian street, and President Obama, especially in his initial response, was just awful on this.
Yes.
I mean, you know, criticized by Democrats and Republicans alike. I remember, Frank, the House had to issue a rejection, I'm using the right statement, of Iran. They signaled their protest, and the vote was something like 415 to 1. I think Ron Paul was the only one who voted against it.
Right.
And I mean, that was a way of telling Obama, you know, speak out more strongly in favor of democracy. You know, Reagan, when this kind of thing happened in Poland, and martial law was declared about 30 years ago, December 1981, you know, Reagan comes out immediately and refers to the Solidarity Movement as freedom fighters, calls the Soviets barbarians, blasts the communist government in Poland. And, I mean, I found in the presidential papers 216 references in Reagan in the 1980s to the word solidarity in Poland.
Yeah.
An official
amazing
state.
Amazing.
Yeah.
And inspiring leadership that, of course, is as relevant today as ever.
Right.
Paul Kenger, let me just ask you, one of the other things that is featuring at the moment, of course, in addition to really every member of the presidential wannabe club sort of genuflecting in the direction of Ronald Reagan, which for those of us who admire him is a good thing, of course. But you also have a running controversy about whether the United States is in decline at the moment.
Yeah.
And I wanted you to sort of tell us a little bit about how Reagan saw the decline that was setting in under Carter, and to some extent under Gerry Ford, for that matter, really, and stood against it. And whether we're doing so today, as we should, you have, for example, Robert Kagan now making an argument that the Obama administration has latched onto that, well, there really isn't any decline. What's your sense? History being made at the moment, of course, is a little bit more difficult to assess than when you have some hindsight. But you're a pro at this, Paul Kenger. What do you make of it?
Well, I honestly feel, and some people think this is harsh, that that President Obama really wouldn't care all that much if America was in decline. I mean, there's the famous quote from Obama where he says, sure, I believe in American exceptionalism, just like the Greeks believe in Greek exceptionalism and the British in British exceptionalism.
Right.
I mean, well, you know, that's not exceptionalism. I mean, if every country believes it's exceptional, then none are exceptional.
Yes.
Reagan believed that. And, you know, Reagan, one of my favorite quotes from Reagan was way back in June 1952. Frank. He gave this speech as a 41-year-old actor. He spoke at William Woods College in Fulton, Missouri, and he said, America is less of a place than an idea. Less of a place than an idea. And Reagan spent the next 40 years of his life and career explaining to people why America was an idea, and why it was a shining city upon a hill. Why was this blessed nation, as he put it, you know, quote, America is a place in the divine scheme of things that was set aside as a promised land, unquote. And there's just nobody talking about this today. President Obama told Matt Lauer this week but basically the founders and their constitution has kind of gotten in his way as a transformational figure.
Well, I really hate that natty constitution thing. Paul Kenger, we have to let you go at that for the moment, but please come back to us soon. This is a fascinating subject, and nobody covers it better than you, needless to say.
Dr.
Paul Kenger, we will, and thank you for joining us today. Dr. Paul Kenger of Grove City College, historian of extraordinary capability. Check out particularly The Crusader, Ronald Reagan and the Fall of Communism. Thanks so much to you, sir. Next up, we've got Louis Gohmert coming on to talk a little bit about the Muslim Brotherhood penetration of the United States government. Straight ahead. Leave your comments or questions for us at 1-800-332-7131.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. 5,000 years ago, Chinese strategist Sun Tzu observed, "You cannot defeat an enemy you do not know." We've tried to prove otherwise and failed, at least since 9/11. Today, Team Obama pretends that we confront something called violent extremism, a euphemism that applies equally to Christian fundamentalists, anti-abortion activists, right-wing militias, and, well, others. You can destroy your government career, noting that among the others are Muslims who believe they must engage in holy war or jihad. So it was surprising to hear the Director of National Intelligence, James Clapper, testify last week that we confront, quote, a global jihadist movement, not just violent extremism. We can only hope that this bit of truth-telling means that we might actually start to understand and effectively counter the most dangerous enemy we face at present. This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Learn more at securefreedomradio.com.
The first step in winning a war is to know whom you're fighting. 9 years after 9/11, the U.S. security establishment has failed to tell us. The very words we need to describe the war are being outlawed. We went from the war on terror under Bush to the war on man-made disasters under Obama. Neither identifies the threat doctrine behind the aggression, Islamic Sharia law. That's why the Center for Security Policy assembled Team B, an independent group of national security professionals, including Bill Clinton's Director of Central Intelligence, James Woolsey. The result is a book that challenges the assumptions of the current administration and exposes the supremacist nature of Sharia and the jihad its adherents are obliged to engage in. This report names the names of those responsible and makes plain the mortal peril now posed to America's Constitution, our national security, and way of life. For more information, visit shariathethreat.com or order your copy of Sharia, the Threat to America at amazon.com.
Congress doesn't have a budget for 2011, but the GOP has proposed a budget for 2012, and Bill Bennett likes it.
Maybe it helps to have that 2012 in the background, people hearing and seeing Ryan and the Republicans saying they're serious about really cutting the budget
as a backdrop
to this debate about 2011. People make the decision, well, Republicans seem much more serious about this.
Bill Bennett's Morning in America, weekday mornings from 6 to 9 on 1260 WRC. New choice, intelligent talk.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
We're back, joined as we have the privilege of being with some regularity by one of the most, well, I think capable, certainly impressive members of the United States House of Representatives. He always laughs when I give him these accolades,
but it's
all true and it's all well deserved. He is Louis Gohmert, representing the 1st District of Texas in the U.S. House, which is now in his fourth term doing that. He is the vice chairman of the Judiciary Committee on Crime, Terrorism, and Homeland Security in the House, and a former judge and a man that I always enjoy talking with, particularly about matters of the Constitution. And Congressman Gohmert, as you probably know, the president has indicated that he's a little, well, peevish about this natty thing, the Constitution. He told Matt Lauer something, as we were just talking about with Paul Kenger in the segment before you joined us, to the effect that, you know, it's kind of getting in the way of his being the transformational figure that he means to be. What do you make of that?
Well, I think he's exactly right. I mean, obviously, he's a smart man. And anyone who seeks to be dictator of the United States finds the Constitution to be problematic. Because it is. Because the founders did not want a dictatorship. They didn't want a totalitarian government. And I've heard, I was with Justice Scalia one time when somebody asked him, a friend of mine said, do you think that the reason we have more freedoms in the U.S. than any other country in history is because of our Bill of Rights. And you know Justice Scalia, he is so blunt, so brilliant. But he said, well, no, of course not. He said, heck, the Soviet Union had a better Bill of Rights than we did. He said, the reason that we have more freedoms than any other country is because our founders wanted to throw as many obstacles in the way of passing laws as they could because they didn't trust government. Yep. That's why we're the most free nation in history. He said, you know, they didn't want just one house. They wanted two houses. That way there would be fussing and it'd be hard to pass a law that both houses would agree on. And then even if it passed that, you got a president that could veto, and then you've got Congress that could override the veto. Then you got the judiciary. They wanted to make it so tough to pass laws that you just couldn't have a runaway dictatorial government.
Yeah, that's the idea.
And that's a problem for our president.
You mentioned
he wants a dictator.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more.
If that's his feeling.
You've mentioned Justice Scalia. I wonder if in the same vein I might ask you about a comment that you may be aware of that Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg made a little while ago, to the effect that she wouldn't really recommend to these emerging democracies that they look to the U.S. Constitution for a model. She was thinking that sort of more contemporary constitutions South Africa's might be preferable to ours. Again, does this give you a sense of unease that people who are responsible for, well, have sworn solemn oaths to preserve and defend and protect and otherwise implement the Constitution of the United States seem to have such a low regard for it?
Well, I hate to be like one of my British friends who answer questions with questions, but how is going out publicly and demeaning our United States Constitution supporting and defending our own Constitution? I'm having a little trouble with that myself.
Yeah.
It is staggering to think that a Supreme Court justice, perhaps she thought that nobody would ever hear her comments, but fortunately we have. But how in the world you would encourage someone to use constitutions from countries where they still do not have the level of freedoms and liberties that we do in this country?
Yeah.
I just do not understand.
Well, I ask this because, of course, as a former judge in the state of Texas, distinguished judge at that, you have much more experience, of course, with the law and interpreting constitutions and so on. But as you know, part of what's going on here, clearly, is the kind of, well, I guess it's been called transnationalism that is favored by folks like the top State Department lawyer, Harold Coe, and for that matter, the President of the United States, and according to Harold Coe, four and sometimes even five members of the Supreme Court. This is an issue that is of great concern, that they seem to be favoring, again, foreign laws or judgments or rulings, even conventions over our own laws and constitution.
Yeah, it is staggering. And there are law schools that teach this. And of course, the president has talked about it, that somehow our constitution is supposed to be a living, breathing document. My goodness. The only way that you can have a country last as long as this one has, where people get to elect their leaders, the best country in the world, is when people follow the law. And the oath that the Supreme Court takes is they're supposed to administer justice without respect to persons, and that they're faithfully and impartially discharge and perform their duties under the Constitution and laws of the United States, and yet they want to go out and twist them. I mean, it is an outrage. And it, as you know, because we're friends and we've talked about it, the reason I left the bench as a judge and chief justice was I wanted to legislate, and I knew under the Constitution that was not appropriate from the bench.
Right.
And I just wish some of these folks that are legislators in black robes would do like I did, take off the daggum black robe, run for office if you want to be a legislator, and get the right to legislate legally, lawfully, constitutionally, like some of the rest of us have.
Well, I commend you for your continuing public service, Congressman Louie Gohmert, in that new role. And I just wanted to mention in this regard, of course, one of the other things that we talk about that's very much relevant to your subcommittee responsibilities is, of course, one particular effort to insinuate foreign laws into our nation, namely Sharia. And I think you, more than just about anybody else on Capitol Hill, have directly and quite pointedly asked about the penetration of groups, notably Muslim Brotherhood Front organizations, into the United States government who have that agenda. And specifically, I just wanted to ask, have you had any satisfactory response to your question as to how many Muslim Brotherhood-associated individuals are involved with the so-called Countering Violent Extremism Working Group of the Department of Homeland Security?
I asked the secretary that question. She was she didn't know. We have pushed that question and we still have not gotten a response. We don't know.
But this, now this I've shouldn't heard from be people that hard
inside.
To answer.
Well, it shouldn't be. I'd be able to look immediately, especially when, as she has, she's given security clearances to some of these folks. And that was another question. I want to know, you know, who in the Muslim Brotherhood, how many? We know she has some. Who all have you given security clearances to, secret security clearances that allow them to access data that allows the Muslim Brotherhood to pass to acquire information about how we're dealing with violent extremism, as they call it, but what many of us call it, radical Islam? The reason many of us call it that is because that's exactly what they've called it.
Or
Osama bin Laden and the 9/11 Commission, as you know, they mentioned Islam 322 times, Muslim 145, Jihad 126, enemy 39, Al-Qaeda 36, Hamas 4, Hezbollah 2, Caliphate 7. None of those terms are allowed to be used in the current lexicon that is training our FBI, our CIA, the administration officials. And as one intelligence officer told me, how in the world can we fight our enemy when we are now being blinded where we can't see who it is that's trying to kill us?
Congressman Gohmert, we're going to have to leave it at this, I'm afraid. And we've got so much more to talk about, including some recent diplomatic daring do that you've had with the Baluchs in Pakistan. But just very quickly, one of the things that I hope you might look into, because it certainly seems to be a breach of the administration's guidelines, that the Director of National Intelligence, General Jim Clapper, in testimony before your colleagues on the Senate side earlier this week, talked about, quote, the global jihad movement, unquote, as a threat. So I think we better find out what the devil he's thinking, he's talking about here, because maybe he actually is beginning to see there is.
Maybe he's figuring it out.
We'll come back to you, sir, very soon. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Keep up the great work. Next up, a senior leader of the defense industry, an important new technology for saving our servicemen's lives and improving our effectiveness on Earth. Straight ahead.
Want the big picture on national security and foreign policy? Find out what Ronald Reagan meant by peace through strength at securefreedomradio.org. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio. Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Hey parents, finding it hard to communicate with kids in today's world of ever-changing slang?
Hi son.
Excuse me?
Introducing the Communicizer. Just strap non-toxic Communicizer to your mouth and go from boring old man speak.
Oh, you know, I'm here if you want to talk.
To 100% off the chain.
Text me whenever, yo.
It's that easy.
Thanks to Communicizer, I'm relevant to my kids again. I mean, a fly, boo.
And now when you buy Communicizer, you get the auto-tune attachment free. Sounds so hip-hop, your kids will want to talk to you for hours.
I used to have to walk 3 miles uphill to school every morning, shorty.
I love you, Dad.
I love you too, son.
Communicizer is not available in stores because it doesn't exist. But that's okay. You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Because kids in foster care don't need perfection. They need you. For more information on how you can adopt, go to AdoptUsKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt Us Kids, and the Ad Council.
For decades, the Democratic Republic of Congo has endured economic collapse, poverty, and war. More than 3.5 million people have died in the conflict. Today, rebel forces continue to wreak havoc in the eastern Kivu provinces. The International Rescue Committee estimates that 30,000 children have been recruited as soldiers, and thousands more have lost their parents. Most of these children lack the most basic level of goods, security, and most especially, clean drinking water. Yet, there is a well of hope coming to eastern Congo in a village called Uvira. Washington, D.C.'s National Community Church is partnering with Global Outreach to bring a water pipeline to the Congo for Christ compound, an orphanage for children who have lost their parents to war and AIDS. Building a clean water source will sustain the school, provide for the children, and hundreds more in the village. Go to www.waterforcongo.com. Learn about the work of Global Outreach and give. You can be part of the community in Uvira, and like a well, you can be a source of hope in life. www.waterforcongo.com.
Hi, I'm Drew Brees, NFL quarterback for the New Orleans Saints, here with Bugs Bunny to remind you to get moving every day.
Because when you get moving an hour a day,
you fuel your body and your mind.
So what do you like to throw around the football like Drew?
Skateboard.
Play frisbee in the park.
Ride a bike.
Kick the soccer ball around.
Or dance in your room.
Just move it your way.
Because nothing makes you feel better than moving every day.
And that makes you part of a winning team.
So be a player.
You'll have more energy to do the things you like to do.
Move it your way and be a player.
Get up and play an hour a day, Doc. Check out how to be a player at letsmove.gov.
Head online to get tips on great ways to get moving every day.
That's right, at letsmove.gov. Let's hear that one more time, Doc. That's www.letsmove.gov. A message from the Ad Council and HHS.
I'll pick you up after school. Okay, I got it.
It's easy to take a day for granted. You and your family are connected by routine, and you stick to it. But what if a disaster strikes without warning? What if life as you know it has completely turned on its head? What if your day's routine is disrupted and you can't reach your family? Have you planned for that? Before a disaster turns your family's world upside down, it's up to you to be ready. Get a kit, make a plan, be informed today. Learn how at www.ready.gov. Ready.gov. This message brought to you by the Federal Emergency Management Agency and the Ad Council.
You're listening to Intelligent Talk on WRC 1260.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back. We are joined by Ed Goddard. He works for Kinetic North America Technology Solutions Group. He is the senior vice president there and responsible for a whole host of very interesting unmanned systems that Kinetic is helping to bring to bear for our United States Armed Forces. And I was particularly struck by reports that I'm hearing about a family of systems known as Dragon Runner. And Ed, I appreciate you coming on Secure Freedom Radio to talk a little bit about sort of what these systems are and what kinds of contributions they are making to the survivability and mission effectiveness of our armed forces.
Well, thanks, Frank. Yeah, the Dragon Runner family was really designed to be a much lighter weight offering for use on the battlefield. As we moved into Afghanistan, where we found there were fewer road systems available, the Dragon Runner became critical for dismounted operations. So they're used quite heavily by explosive ordnance disposal and route clearance teams where, you know, they don't have the ability to access areas with large vehicles and need to approach on foot.
Before we get too much into this, just describe what it is. I'm sure most of us listening haven't ever seen one of these things or know what it is you're talking about. It is an unmanned vehicle, but give us a sense of its size, its weight, is it tracked, and so on.
Yeah, so the Dragon Runner family are basically two systems, one that's a basic weight of about 20 pounds, and it has tracks or wheels, depending on the configuration. It has, it's modular, so you can attach different capabilities, such as a manipulator for doing explosive ordnance disposal missions, or can you can install an ISR head for doing surveillance.
I'm sorry, ISR meaning?
So ISR are really sort of classified or non-classified missions to collect information.
Mm-hmm.
Full footage.
Okay.
So that usually comes with day-night camera systems to be able to interrogate the environment and look around for suspicious activities.
Okay, so a guy in the field is facing, for example, the problem which is endemic. I think there was something like 16,000 improvised explosive device attacks or attempted attacks in Afghanistan last year. He senses that some problem down the road might involve one of these things. He pulls this little unit off of a rack or I guess out of a kit and sends it down the road. He's controlling it remotely. It's got these cameras. It's got a manipulating arm. He's able to take it right up to the suspected device and then disable it or trigger it if necessary, but not put his own forces in harm's way. Is that the basic idea?
Yeah, that's correct. So if in a case where there appears to be some suspicious item on the side of the road, an EOD technician would drop the robot on the ground and operate it from about 300 or 400 meters away to investigate the suspicious area. And it would use the robot to poke and probe to establish whether or not it, in fact, is an IED. If it is an IED, they'll usually try and either collect some forensics from it or, if appropriate, do a controlled detonation of the IED to render it safe.
So this is a means of, in effect, keeping our folks out of the lethal distance of these kinds of devices, dispose of them or otherwise deal with them. You mentioned that there are two different versions of this. Are they doing different jobs? And how much combat experience have they had to date?
So the DR-20 has been in combat now for 4 years, the larger platform. The DR-10 we are just starting to deploy later this spring. The DR-10 will be more used by infantrymen to help with their missions. This is a small tracked vehicle weighing about 10 pounds that can be actually tossed over, say, a 10-foot wall or into the second story of a building and driven around remotely by the operator to investigate the environment. So
wow.
It really provides eyes and ears around the corner and over the wall for troops in theater.
Yeah. And this, you say, is just the Dragon Runner 10 from Kinetic is just coming into the force now. Is that right?
That's correct.
Okay.
There'll be field trials of it in Afghanistan later this year.
And presumably, and again, we're speaking with Ed Goddard of Kinetic. He is a man with considerable experience in the defense, aerospace, and industrial equipment industries, now serving as a senior vice president at Kinetic North America. You have, I am quite certain, got a sense of the state of the art here. We're hearing about the improvement still over the kind of, miniaturization you've been working on, even nanotechnologies that are now perhaps going to be made available to our military personnel and law enforcement, intelligence, and others. Is this really the state of the art, putting these unmanned units of one size or another, one capability or another, into harm's way and trying to keep our troops out of it?
Well, certainly. I mean, the whole mission of unmanned systems is to put distance between our troops and the task that they need to accomplish on the battlefield, whether it be, IED intervention, route clearance, getting in to get up close to the enemy without exposing individuals. That's the real goal of unmanned systems. And the more we can do that, the more capability, the more missions, we believe that the safer our troops will be when they engage the enemy.
Ed, let me ask you this, because we're obviously at a moment where massive budget cuts are coming down, as you know. Whole programs are going to be eliminated in all likelihood. Certainly, lots of modernization programs are on the chopping block. The acquisition process is ponderous, to say the least. Looking at this from your perspective, to what extent are the kinds of technologies that you're developing and the ability to bring them to market, if you will, likely to be adversely impacted by this? And to what extent can what you're doing perhaps offset some of the otherwise really devastating effects of these cuts?
Yeah, so it's certainly a concern of ours as we watch the discussion about defense budgets in the future. We believe unmanned systems, ground robots specifically, offer a great opportunity to provide force multiplication for our troops in an environment where there's going to be less money and probably, if not the same, more missions for our troops to accomplish. Having unmanned systems available to help with that, we think, provides good value. You know, when we first put robots into theater of operation, you know, nobody thought that robots would be robust and reliable and durable enough to operate in that environment. And I think we've demonstrated
that. Let alone be thrown over walls or into the second story of buildings. That's
exactly.
Amazing. Yeah, yeah. And talk to me about the acquisition process. You clearly have some experience with it. You've survived it. To what extent is it simply making it difficult, if not impossible, for companies like yours to innovate as aggressively as you'd like when it takes, you know, in some cases 10 or 15 years to bring combat systems to bear? Is that what you've been experiencing, or is the fact that you've got relatively small, relatively, unsophisticated pieces of equipment that you're developing mean that you've really not had that kind of problem?
Well, it's clearly all about value. I mean, in the last 10 years, while we've been on a war footing, there's been, you know, certainly a move to accelerate the procurement process to get needed capabilities into the hands of our troops as quickly as possible. And we relied on those rapid acquisition strategies to allow us to get that equipment fielded quickly. You know, we're hopeful that what we've learned over the last 10 years of supporting an environment on a war footing, that, you know, the acquisition process might in fact morph towards a more active and more aggressive acquisition process than it had been prior to our involvement in the Middle East. You know, it's clear to us that if we go back to the days of, you know, 10 years to do a procurement of a technology to get it fielded, I think we're going to have some serious challenges in front of us. So we're hopeful that lessons learned will be taken.
Well, I hope so, too. Ed, thank you so much for joining us. Ed Goddard of Kinetic North America, thanks for what you and your company are doing for our troops and for our security. Please keep it up, and please keep coming back to us with updates, if you would.
Next up,
we'll be speaking with Andy McCarthy about, among other things, Mitt Romney on Sharia. Straight ahead.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
From a size 18 down to a size 5, and I was able to keep it off.
Angie had some serious challenges.
I had gone through a divorce and put on quite a bit of weight. There was an accident where I was put on a lot of medications, and I put on over 60 pounds. I tried every kind of diet, but diets just did not work.
Diets don't work is something they hear a lot over at the MetaSystem from Judy Singer.
I heard about Judy Singer's MetaSystem, and I thought, well, you know, couldn't hurt to call. And I called them up, and they told me all about the product, and I thought, well, I'll give it a try. From the first week that I was on it, I wasn't hungry a lot, and it was just amazing. Jumping about 3 months ahead, I dropped 63 pounds.
If you're ready for a natural product that cleanses your system and helps you lose fat, talk to a Judy Singer counselor about the Meta System. Call 1-800-711-JUDY. 1-800-711-JUDY. The Meta System from Judy Singer. Powerful, all-natural weight loss. 1-800-711-JUDY.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the War of Ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
I have held the same mirror for 13 years.
I have been decorated with purple dinosaurs, baseball teams, and football helmets.
I have witnessed 33 Thanksgiving dinners and one wedding proposal.
I have tiny notches marking the growth of three children.
I have caused a learning disability.
I am the reason that a fifth grader simply can't sit still.
I am responsible for a five-year-old's rage.
Just because you can't see lead paint doesn't mean it's not on walls, doors, windows, and sills. Today, lead paint poisoning affects over 1 million children. If your home is built before 1978, your family could be at risk. Let's make all kids lead-free kids. Log on to leadfreekids.org or call 800-424-LEAD.
I am the reason a child has trouble hearing.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
Brought to you by the Coalition to End Childhood Lead Poisoning, EPA, HUD, and the Ad Council.
Is Nancy Pelosi looking to a higher power to get a balanced budget? Hugh Hewitt sets her straight.
When I hear you speak about this issue, of course, it's the Gospel of Matthew. When I was hungry, you gave me to eat and listen.
I just got to stop here. Nancy Pelosi quoting the Gospel of Matthew, as though that's got anything to do with the government. Let me just tell you, it doesn't.
Can I get an amen?
The Hugh Hewitt Show, weeknights from 6 to 9 on 1260 WRC. New choice, intelligent talk.
If you're a veteran of Iraq or Afghanistan, like me, coming home can be harder than expected. I felt a little out of place, but it turns out I wasn't alone.
At IAVA.org, there's a free online community of thousands of OIF and OEF vets who've got your back here, just like they did over there. So now, I'm never alone. I can get the resources I need, and talk to tons of people who understand where I'm coming from.
Whether it's navigating the GI Bill,
or VA hospitals,
managing the transition home, or meeting people you can share stories with,
you'll find it at IAVA.org.
Even if it's just everyday stuff,
like getting tips on where to find a nice sweater for my dog.
Did he just say
sweater?
That?
Really? What?
Okay, maybe not that, but everything else. No matter where you are, Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America is there for you. Join our community at IAVA.org.
We got your back.
Brought to you by Iraq Afghanistan Veterans of America and the Ad Council.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back. We have been joined with a slightly ailing Andy McCarthy, but even though he's under the weather, he's on his game, I know, and very good to spend a few minutes with us as he does each week. Andy is the excellent source of much wisdom on lawfare, national security and the law at National Review Online, the author of The Grand Jihad and Willful Blindness, among other books, including as a contributing author of the Team B Report, Sharia, the Threat to America. Andy, you have written a very important piece, it seems to me, particularly at a moment when Governor Mitt Romney is increasingly, seemingly, the likely candidate of the Republican Party for the presidency, about his attitudes towards Sharia, for want of a better term. We've not really heard him talk about that, as best I can tell, and that causes you some concern, and I think should cause all of us some. Tell us what your thoughts are on it.
Well, Frank, I think that Romney has historically, at least on occasion, said some very positive things in the sense of assessing how strong he would be on the jihadist threat. You may remember some years back, he made a comment, I think this was in the last election go-round, about how we absolutely should be doing surveillance in radical mosques.
Yes.
And I have drawn from that, some positive feeling about him. But I do worry that he is apt to fall for this what I regard as a false dichotomy that's been drawn for a number of years. And I don't think this is just the Obama administration. I think it's the Bush administration as well, even though the Obama people have exacerbated as they are wont to do. But this idea that everybody falls into the box of either a violent extremist or a moderate. And I think if you start to go down that road, you are apt not only to miss the broader and more insidious threat posed by Islamists who may or may not be violent, but who have a very serious agenda which will detract from American civil liberties, but also you're not paying enough attention to the ideology that fuels not only that broader threat but the terrorism itself. So I would not like to see Governor Romney assuming that he ultimately becomes the nominee, when we've got a long way to go on that score. But you certainly don't want to see a situation where he is falling into the same problems that we've seen for the last 8 to 10 years.
Yeah. There's an interesting piece by Timothy Furnish at History News Network. I don't know if you've seen this, Andy, but it speaks to this issue, and it suggests that maybe some of the problem here is the reluctance on Mitt Romney's part, because of his Mormonism possibly being a political liability for him, to get into any kind of conversation about religion. And I have to say, in the last cycle, I spent about 2 hours with him at one point talking about this sort of issue. And I must say, came away very much with that sense that he was willing to talk, as you indicated, about jihadism as a problem. And you mentioned, to his credit, he talked about the need to do more surveillance to try to ferret it out. But when he was put in a position where he thought he was being asked to condemn the religion, though I think the distinction that you, among others, have made between Sharia, a political, military, legal doctrine that is really, well, seditious, I think, on the one hand, and the practice of Islam by people who don't want to impose all of that on either themselves or anybody else. He didn't get that. And I just wonder whether that's the bind that you feel he has as well.
Yeah, I'm worried about that. I've also thought that one of the real contributions that Newt Gingrich has brought to the race is the fact that he's a very clear thinker on this subject. And I thought that at least in their interchanges, he could, if nothing else, press Romney and move Romney toward the right direction. I always feel that we're all trying to move Romney to the right direction on this, that, or the other thing. But Newt, I think, has thought very deeply about Sharia, makes a point of dividing Muslims who embrace the West and embrace our civil liberties and our freedom culture with Islamists who want to impose Sharia standards, and has no hesitation about talking very bluntly about the fact that that category of people pose a profound threat to the United States. I think that's a big target that Romney just misses, at least at the moment.
Yeah. Well, I hope with your writing and thinking and expertise on this subject that we will, in fact, see him moved in the right direction on it. I certainly agree with you. position
I'm
on
sure that,
Newt Gingrich
I'm
on this.
I'm sure that they're just delighted every time they see my byline.
Well, I am, that's for sure. Speaking of which, Andy, the effort to keep us from talking about these issues, understanding them, let alone addressing them, continues. As you know, among others, the Muslim Brotherhood Front Organization, known as the Council on American-Islamic Relations, has been hard at it, suppressing those like General Jerry Boykin, Fred Grandy, Steve Coughlin, and most recently Ray Kelly, who have deigned or dared to talk about any of these issues. What's the latest, as best you can tell, as to how we're dealing with this clearly contrary constitutional gambit to suppress freedom of speech when it comes to what Kerr and others think of as blasphemy of their religion or religious practice?
Well, I think by and large, Frank, we're losing because the I think several years ago, the thought that we would attrit our free expression rights in any way in order to avoid giving offense to Muslims would have been laughable. Now it's not only laughable, it's official State Department policy. On the other hand, I think that the Islamists can always be depended on to go too far, and my own view of it is that by putting a big old bullseye on Ray Kelly's back, they've made a big mistake, because Kelly is extremely popular for good reason in New York and in the circles where people care about the national security of the United States, which is actually most of the country, although sometimes not the loudest.
Heartening to know that. A
yeah.
well-kept secret, unfortunately, here inside
yeah.
the Beltway, that's for sure.
But I thought that you know, there was a very important article, an op-ed that was out yesterday, I think, by Jim Woolsey and Tom Ridge, which was, you know, very positive toward Kelly. For what little it may be worth, I've written it at some length about my own personal experience in counterterrorism with Ray Kelly and my own assessment for what that may be worth of why his intelligence-based counterterrorism has to be the model for the rest of the country, far from what Kerr and I think derivatively the Obama administration would do, which would basically be to wipe it out and delegate counterterrorism to all the wrong people, you know, local community partners who turn out to be these Islamist organizations.
Yeah, the cares of the world, for sure.
Yep, exactly right. If we're going to keep the country safe, Ray Kelly's been a pioneer, and that's the way that we have to go. And I think when you see how viciously they go after him and how they've really, I think, overstepped in doing so, you get a good sense of how important what he's done has been for many years.
Boy, I hope you're right about that overstepping business, Andy. You certainly are right about his importance. And in fact, we should be clear, folks, this isn't about Ray Kelly, you know, doing an interview for The Third Jihad, the movie that became the immediate cause of this controversy, or about using The Third Jihad as a training vehicle. It is about the fact that he runs an effective counterterrorism operation in the New York Police Department, and that's the real target of the stealth jihadists. And nobody has done more to describe what they're up to than Andy McCarthy with his grand jihad. Andy, thank you for joining us each week and for this most recent contribution, especially given that you're not feeling so well. I hope you will feel better and that you'll be back with us again in good health next week, and that the rest of you will be back with us tomorrow. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.